This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kohatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com. The U.S. Department of Justice recently released a damning report on the Baltimore Police Department in Maryland a year after riots rocked the city over Freddie Gray's police custody death. The report singles out how BPD officers routinely and egregiously violated the constitutional rights of African Americans, stopping black men in particular hundreds of times with few, if any, charges. Racist epithets were commonly used to refer to black residents, revealing widespread problems of racism among officers. The DOJ report additionally found gender bias against sexual assault victims and disproportionate targeting of transgender Baltimore residents. The problems are so systemic and deep-rooted that many community members and groups are calling for police officers who specifically violated policies to be publicly named and fired, and for the Baltimore Police Department to be overhauled from top to bottom. My guest is Jody Armour, the Roy P. Crocker Professor of Law at the University of Southern California. He's the author of the book Negrophobia and Reasonable Racism, The Hidden Costs of Being Black in America. He's a Soros Justice Senior Fellow of the Open Societies Institute's Center on Crime, Communities, and Culture, and he's the Race and Criminal Justice Correspondent for this program. Welcome to Rising Up, Jody.
Good to be back with you, Sonali.
So first, what a horrific report detailing such top-to-bottom problems. If I didn't know that this report was written and investigated by the Department of Justice, I might imagine, you know, an independent watchdog organization looking at this police department. But this should not be surprising either to us as Americans, and certainly I can imagine it's not surprising at all to Baltimore's black residents, right?
Well, that's the key. This document is an important document for defining what the true narrative is out here between the community citizens and the police in general, black community members and the police in particular. We, for a long time, Sonali, had two different social realities going on in people's heads. You've had a community of black folks saying there's discrimination, there's profiling, there's brutality going on out here on a mass scale, and you aren't acknowledging it. And a lot of white Americans saying they don't see police community interactions as that fraught, as that troublesome necessarily. And you can watch different TV stations and listen to different radio programs, and it's like people are living in their own echo chambers and believing their own rhetoric and not checking it against external reality, empirical reality. Well, now we have a DOJ report that gives empirical support to the social reality that black folk have been describing, and a lot of non-black folk have been lowballing or discounting or rejecting. And it's a ringing vindication, really, of the rage that was in the streets of Baltimore protesting and doing in every way they possibly could, politically expressing their frustration and anger. And this report really, like I said again, vindicates them in spades.
Now, one might imagine that this report might not have even come about had there not been the riots last year. The DOJ also looked at Ferguson's police department because of the uprising there over Mike Brown's death. Do you feel that in many ways the DOJ is sending a message to communities around the country that we're going to ignore you and ignore the complaints that you make about your police departments until you make it impossible for us to do so?
That seems to be the formula, doesn't it? And it's a, you know, it's a sad commentary on our democracy, but it is the way it is, right? That a lot of times it isn't until there's an uprising or what some people will characterize as a riot, civil unrest, let's say, if we want to be neutral. I view them as uprisings myself because I see them as expressions of righteous anger that's rooted in a social reality of oppression So I view them as uprisings, but those who see them as illegitimate are going to call them riots, and we'll take a more neutral term for now, civil uprising. These are going to continue to happen as long as there's this moral crisis, this crisis in moral legitimacy. And it seems, as you're pointing out, that as Black Lives Matter said, unless you disrupt and force, impose uncomfortable conversations on the powers that be, they will ignore you. And we shouldn't be there. So now it seems that city after city, DOJ keeps coming back with the same reports. It isn't a few bad apples. We have systemic problems. One thing this DOJ report as the others put to rest is the canard of the few bad apples. Oh, just a few bad apples. No, it's systemic is what the DOJ report is saying very clearly. And why do we have to keep on requiring buildings to burn, you know, Black people's heads to get hit by sticks and tasers before we'll have some kind of DOJ response like this? That is the question.
And of course, having a report like this doesn't necessarily guarantee reform either. Now, let's talk about how you can trace back the BPD's problems. This perhaps is also applicable to police departments around the country. The DOJ report points out that the 1990s era of tough on crime policing is where a lot of these problems, deep-rooted problems, began. The so-called zero tolerance enforcement, and even that language, zero tolerance, such an unforgiving term. But is it important to understand the roots of this? That, you know, rather than just pointing out the statistics, that it was these overzealous desires to over-police communities that predictably led us to where we are today.
Yeah, absolutely critical, Sonali, for us not to reproduce the mistakes of the past, to understand the source of those mistakes. And their source was this mentality that we have to be tough on crime. We have to become a tough on crime country. And part of getting tough on crime is allowing police a lot of discretion when it comes to things like broken windows policing or zero tolerance policing, which is basically the philosophy that from tiny acorns, mighty oak trees grow. If you don't nip things in the bud and really seize on little quality of life infractions like selling loose cigarettes on the sidewalk, it will escalate into, you know, more disorder and greater crime. That was the theory anyway. That theory has yet to be proven to be true, by the way, although it is an article of faith in a lot of law enforcement circles. So yes, the key insight that is coming out of more and more of these DOJ reports and discussions is that we have to change the way we think about crime and punishment and mass incarceration. Willie Horton cost the Democrats the 88 election between Dukakis and Bush Sr., you know, the Black recidivist. Trope was born. Reagan brought in the Black welfare queen trope. You put all of that together, and we, for 30 plus years, thought of wrongdoers, especially Black wrongdoers, as so much toxic human waste to be dumped somewhere. And so changing that mentality is the key, is what we're getting out.
Now, let's talk about some of the specifics from this report. Just horrific statistics. BPD officers recorded over 300,000 pedestrian stops from January 2010 to May 2005. This is the period over which the investigation focused on. And the DOJ report even admits that the real number might be much higher because they don't record every stops. Predominantly in African-American neighborhoods, and in all of these stops, only a tiny percentage actually resulted in actual charges. There were 7 African-American men during this 5-year period that were stopped more than 30 times, and hundreds of men stopped on at least 10 separate occasions each of them. I mean, what is that like? I can't even imagine or fathom the trauma that comes from being continuously targeted by police as if you're a criminal.
Yeah, here's what it's like, and I'll point out that, by the way, this stop and frisk approach has not proven to be effective. The New York Daily News, I think it was, came out with a recent op-ed saying we were wrong. We thought that we needed stop and frisk. We thought that the judge that said it was unconstitutional was going to increase crime and there was going to be bloodshed in the street. And they're saying in a couple of days ago editorial, we were wrong. Actually, crime has declined. At the same time, their zero tolerance stop and frisk policies have been reduced. So, Sonali, I can just give you one quick response to what the experience must be like. I run into it repeatedly as a law school professor. I'm downtown at JW Marriott visiting a friend from A Better Chance, which is a program we both came from, targets inner city kids and gives them a chance to go to college by sending them to better schools and boarding schools. Lino Garcia, now the managing, general manager of ESPN Deportes, and I met at JW Marriott. We parted. I waited for my ride, had guards approach me and say, are you here to see someone? I said, yes, but why aren't you asking anyone else in the lobby? They said, because we've been having a problem with transients, sir. I was dressed like in a sports jacket, slacks, hard shoes. All I didn't have was a tie, but otherwise I had a professional suit. I said, so you're saying I look like a transient, a homeless person? He said, don't take it personally, sir. He walked back to the other two guards. He was a black one. They sent the black one over. He huddled with the other two white guards. I called a friend from Latham & Watkins and said, if they come back, I want you to hear this. He came back. He said, sir, what's the name of the guest you came here to see? I know as a law prof that if I don't give them a name that they can find in their database, I've assumed the ejectable status of a trespasser, and they were getting ready to lay hands on me and throw me out of the lobby of JW Marriott as a homeless person. And I had to swallow that indignity, Sonali, and give him that name and vindicate his perception of me or wind up in a paddy wagon. And black folk have to swallow those kind of dignities on a daily basis, and that's what this report is bringing out.
Oh, Jody, thank you so much for sharing that experience. And you know, I think this report does indicate that these, and should be an indication that wherever the DOJ looks, it will find such systemic racism in its police departments, particularly in big cities. It's just a matter of taking the time and energy to look. So let's talk about the pervasive racism within the BPD, as pointed out by the DOJ report, simply in the language that the officers use among one another and to the people that they are targeting. The N-word, continuously and often used, racist epithets used, and this is, you know, pointed out by the Justice Department. Again, we shouldn't be surprised, should we?
Yeah, for 30 plus years, Sonali, we've otherized criminals. That is, we've, if you will, since they use the word, they use the language, we should too. They niggerize criminals or blacks they think might be involved in criminal activities. And it's been part of our popular culture, not just police culture. Chris Rock launched his comedic career walking back and forth in front of a black audience and saying, I love black people, but I hate niggers. Mm. And one of his core definitions of a so-called nigger was a black person who does a crime. So what he was saying was, I love law-abiding blacks, but I hate black criminals. Bill Cosby was saying that kind of stuff in his pound cake speech while he was hypocritically slipping Mickeys in women's drinks and abusing them. So you, for a long time, had in this country a kind of politics of respectability driven distinction between good Negroes and bad Negroes, black people and niggas, and as a culture, we've allowed ourselves to otherize black criminals who, by the way, are disproportionately poor. The black crime rates between middle class blacks, rather than crime rates between middle class blacks and middle class whites, are about the same. So most, when you're talking about N-words, you're mainly talking about truly disadvantaged blacks. We have treated these truly disadvantaged blacks as N-words for a long time, and now it's coming home to roost in our law enforcement policy.
the gender bias against sexual assault victims was also a rampant problem in the Baltimore Police Department, as the DOJ report points out. And there is such a horrific, such horrific descriptions of the treatments of victims, you know, people who are already victims one time around, only to essentially become victimized a second time around by the Baltimore Police Department. Doesn't the kind of behavior outlined in the report discourage the reporting of actual crime, something that, you know, is the whole point of the police?
Yeah, we don't take sexual assault seriously in this society and in this culture. And it should sadden but not surprise us that since we don't take it seriously as a society, our law enforcement agencies don't take it seriously either. And we have to change those attitudes in a proactive way. We even have problems with those attitudes coming into the jury box. When you have ordinary jurors bringing their, you know, kind of slut-shaming mentalities into the jury box and making assessments of sexual assault cases, date rape cases, et cetera, you have so many prejudices and stereotypes that are misogynistic and cut against victims of sexual abuse. And we really have to do more, one, to train on, you know, what is involved in these sexual assault cases and make them more understanding of what's going on. Number two, bringing more women officers onto the force.
Right. Vanita Gupta, the head of the Civil Rights Division at the Justice Department, who was the one who actually held the press conference on the DOJ report, said that some women won't ever report a rape in Baltimore again. The police routinely failed to gather evidence and belittled women who reported sexual assault, and also in particular mistreated sex workers, which is also in some ways related to its treatment of transgender residents of Baltimore. Trans women routinely harassed, accused of prostitution simply for standing at a bus stop. These should also, I think, and it's important, I think, that the DOJ pointed this out at a time when we have increasing attacks against transgender Americans in general, right?
Oh, yeah. What we found in the empirical research is that a lot of legal interventions didn't make much difference in increasing the conviction rate for accused rapists. They got rid of the force requirement in some jurisdictions and did other things with firming up what it means to consent and making affirmative expressions, but not a lot of increase in convictions until they did one thing, Sonali. They started implementing more rape shield laws. The rape shield laws, by keeping a woman's sexual history, a victim's sexual history, out of the trial, keeps the jury from having its judgment clouded by all kinds of stereotypes and prejudices it has. And what jurors tend to do, consciously or unconsciously, is vindicate the sexual autonomy interests of so-called good women, but not those of so-called bad women or ones they view as marginalized. And so, yeah, it is. We have a society-wide problem with victims from socially marginalized groups, whether they be transgender folk, whether they be poor women, whether they be women who don't fit certain stereotypes about what is an appropriate amount of sexual activity to engage in, slut-shaming kind of cultural problems that we have. And until we deal with that societally, we're going to keep having these problems. But one place to start is by training our law enforcement more effectively to deal with it better.
Hmm. Well, Jody, the Ferguson report by the DOJ has been criticized for not really resulting in deep enough reforms. Do you think that the Baltimore report will go the same way? I mean, it's one thing for the DOJ, particularly in Obama's last year in office, to come up with this report. It's another thing for this report to actually be taken seriously.
Yeah, robust enforcement. You know, it sometimes doesn't happen. Sometimes it does. I'll give one example. LAPD. LAPD is under a lot of fire now for not taking the black lives that have been lost recently through shootings seriously enough. And I share those concerns. It has a lot of problems yet to address, okay? But it's also come a long way. Thanks to a DOJ consent decree at the 1999-2000, really at the end of 99-2000, that really had teeth in it and really created a transformation in LAPD's interaction with the community. Now, that's not again to say that it has arrived, but LAPD used to be something along the lines of Serpico, LA Confidential, and Training Day all rolled together. That was the Rampart scandal with Rafael Perez Sonali. And the department has come a long way from those days. And so the DOJ's consent decree approach can work, but it's going to take real oversight and real enforcement and prioritizing it as an enforcement matter. Hmm.
And by the way, the occupation of LA City Hall, calling for the firing of LAPD Police Chief Charlie Beck, has continued 1 month in, and we've been bringing reports from that occupation. Jody, always a pleasure to have you on. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Sonali.
Jody Armour is the Roy P. Crocker Professor of Law at the University of Southern California, and he is also the race and criminal justice correspondent for Rising Up with Sonali. I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com.